Welcome back to the Business of Government magazine, a special edition of the Business of Government Hour. In this final segment, I want to introduce government executives who share their insights on the work they do and the efforts they lead. Their respective missions force them to look ahead, and although they come from diverse disciplines, they are all focusing on finding what works. Ellen Herbst, Chief Financial Officer and Assistant Secretary of Administration at the U.S. Department of Commerce, joined me on the Business of Government Hour to share her insights on the management challenges she faces.
The first thing that our mission leader said was we need to be able to hire faster and we need to acquire things faster. And once I got over my broken heart, I realized that they had handed us a great gift, which was those mission leaders had told us how important what we do is, right? If the first thing out of their mouths was help me, essentially hiring someone and buying something is really about bringing in resources to accomplish the mission, right? So they said that's so important that we've got to do better at it. Well, this becomes our burning platform. If you do shared services right, you will get at minimum cost avoidance, and you will likely get cost savings if you do it right. But that's not the reason to do it. The reason to do it is to make sure that we can continue to deliver excellent mission support to these important missions in an environment where our resources are going to continue to be constrained, where our people are continuously asked to do more with limited budgets. And so I think the focus on delivering effective mission support will lead us to a better outcome and will still save us money in the long run. And so you don't have to make cost cutting the primary reason you're doing it. We picked four areas in mission support. The four are HR, acquisition, IT, and financial management. And then we put a project in place that the board of directors signed off on that was built on data. So we gathered a lot of data in those four areas, including an enormous effort on voice of the customer. We analyzed that data against the criteria we were using about how would we change the way we're doing these things based on this data if our goal is better, more consistent service delivery, better accountability, better transparency. The teams that did the work were the people who actually do the work. And it was an amazing thing to watch and lead as the project sponsor, because these folks who you might think were more, you know, they might be concerned about I'm goring my own ox, they just did amazing work. And they came up with some terrific recommendations based on the data and the data analysis. And we were supported by good contract support and so forth. But those recommendations were presented to the board of directors, and we are now moving forward into, okay, great recommendations. Now the real hard work begins, which is the detailed planning for the concepts of operations, the detailed implementation planning, and then on to execution. So we're really just in the detailed planning stages at this point. I've been fortunate enough to be able to participate in the larger government-wide conversation about shared services, and I am, I think, one of the more, you know, I represent one of the passionate ends of the spectrum around this is so important to do for the reasons we've talked about already. These are important functions. We are not on a sustainable path in terms of the resources we need. The investment in systems and technology and automation that has to be done to either renew our existing investment or to drive even more investment in technology to help these areas. If we try to do it on our own, each one of us on our own, we will never get there. I think in the area of HR, we have opportunities there. You have to be very thoughtful in HR because you're talking about the core of bringing people in, supporting them throughout their careers, helping operational managers lead and develop them. So you have to be prepared to do your homework and be very thoughtful about how shared services can provide a better outcome in those areas. And I think that's one where we need to take our time and invest in the analysis of what the best way to approach it is. But that is another area, I think, that is ripe for shared services. And again, in the area of information technology, which is probably the area the government has already done a number of things in, but there's still so many areas that are ripe for whether it is the buying, so you go back to strategically sourcing, whether it is sharing the resource around data centers and so forth, we have to do this. And I think as both the CFO, but as someone who's responsible for delivering these mission services, it's our responsibility to put these things on a more sustainable path for the future.
While the U.S. Department of Justice has a varied and wide-ranging mission, its core objective is to protect the American people. Information and technology have an important and powerful role to advance, protect, and serve the DOJ mission. Joe Klimovich, Chief Information Officer at the U.S. Department of Justice, joined me on the Business of Government Hour to provide his insights on DOJ's IT strategy.
The priorities there are exceed customer expectations. I don't want to just meet customer expectations, although that may be a necessary precursor, but I want to exceed customer expectations. And that means a strong customer engagement, strong customer service and the operations, and really being able to act as a trusted advisor to customers. We want to manage taxpayers' money wisely. That's one of the things that I think we're accountable for here. So that means strong accountability, performance. I want to enable innovative sharing of services and information, essentially acting as a service broker, building a trusted environment for data management and interoperability, and then promoting data and information accessibility to not only with the private sector and so on, but is to foster better collaboration within the 40-plus components within the department. I want to protect fourth one is protect our mission, combating cyber threats, enhancing the identity, credential, access management, preventing and detecting insider threats, and then being able to apply analytics in near real time so that we can react faster. And the last one, but not least, is building that future-ready workforce. So how do we attract high-quality, diverse workforce? How do we retain and cultivate workforce with the right skills? And then how do we build a culture of engagement and reward innovation? So those are our priorities that are called out in our strategic plan.
Making this IT strategy a reality is quite challenging.
Well, I think cybersecurity has to be my number one challenge, as I think it is with most federal CIOs. The cyber attacks are increasing in aggression, sophistication, bypassing a lot of traditional security tools. I'm really focusing on strengthening and making sure that our security posture is as good as it can be to defend against these attacks and protect our sensitive law enforcement, national security, and other government personnel data, as well as just helping protect the integrity of our mission systems. So that's our number one challenge. I think the recruiting and retaining highly qualified IT personnel is probably my second big effort. And the last one I just close with is I think we have to operate in an uncertain budget climate. And in that uncertain budget climate, I have to continually look to improve the quality of IT services while driving down the cost of those services.
How has the Federal Information Technology Acquisition Reform Act, or FITARA, expanded the role of the Federal Chief Information Officer? Joe Klimovich explains.
FITARA strengthens the CO's responsibility and accountability for agency IT programs. From my perspective, FITARA is a great opportunity for CIOs to really solves a lot of the highest level challenges in the federal IT space. You know, it increases responsibility and accountability. It gives the CIOs the tools that we need to drive real innovation and realize efficiencies. However, the CIOs really now are being forced to take ownership of their IT portfolios. I mean, there's no you have an issue in your department and you can't say, I didn't know about it or what's going on there. So it does achieve, I think, that aspect. And so the CIOs really need to step up and take responsibility.
As a nation, we are faced with pervasive cyber threats. Malicious actors, including those at the nation-state level, are motivated by a variety of reasons that include espionage, political and ideological beliefs, and financial gain. The U.S. Department of Homeland Security, DHS, and its National Protection Programs Directorate works to assist federal agencies to understand and manage cyber risk, reduce the frequency and impact of cyber incidents, and readily identify network security issues and take action. Dr. Phyllis Schneck, Deputy Undersecretary for Cybersecurity and Communications within DHS, joined me on the Business of Government Hour to provide her insights into her role and the work she does.
So the National Protection and Programs Directorate of the Department of Homeland Security, the mission is to lead the national effort to secure and enhance the resilience of the nation's infrastructure against cyber and physical threats. And that's very important because as we go forward under the vision of my boss, Undersecretary Suzanne Spaulding, we look at all threats and the consequences.
Trying to fulfill its cyber protection mission is quite challenging, but it offers a host of opportunities. Dr. Phyllis Schneck continues.
So I'm going to give you my top three priorities because those lead to the challenges. Yes. Number one is building trust. Trust with our stakeholders, and I consider them customers, whether that's the federal civilian government. We mitigate cyber risk, cyber threat, and response. So that's our responsibility across federal civilian government and private sector. And my first priority therein for those customers is building their trust so that they will share with us an event, because every time we learn something, we can use that to protect so many others, and so that they will trust us to come in and clean up an event with our experts. And trust is also a challenge, as you know, in this environment. I hear from my private sector colleagues, and I know from my experience, there's never been a harder time to share information or even in some cases internationally be affiliated with the U.S. government as a private company. But there's also never been a more urgent time to put information together, to put knowledge together, to connect the dots, to have that resilience in our infrastructures, both cyber and physical. So that's both a priority of mine, to build that trust, top priority, and a challenge. My second priority has been building situational awareness. And that means every time we protect something, we should learn from that event and use that to push back out most as rapidly as possible into the federal civilian government and private sector, using people and machines. The third, of course, is leveraging the cybersecurity framework that comes to us from President's Executive Order 13636. 3 winters ago, it was released in, I believe, February of 2014, a few months after I took this job. And I believe using this framework has helped us to get these messages across in an executive way, as well as to give both state and local and small to medium business something from which to work in best practices in cyber so that we can not only simplify it, for them to use and be safer, but also get it to hundreds of thousands of boardrooms across the country and hopefully across the world.
Dr. Phyllis Schneck has a vision on how to combat cyber threats in real time, and it takes the form of a weather map. Using data and analytics to get a full-scale, real-time model of potential cyber threats, predicting cyber as opposed to climate threats.
So this is one of my favorite topics. I studied high-speed tornado forecasting with high-performance computing before I get into security. So this is where some of my analogies are coming from. So if you think about a weather map, what's a weather map? Everybody can picture one. You probably looked at one this morning. It'll show you visually what's happening very quickly. There is a lot of information that goes into that. There's only a little bit that you really need to decide how you're going to do your day. So you don't need even some of the most detailed information on upper atmospheric behavior or even where they got the humidity. You just need to know if it's going to rain, if you're going to wear a hat. Simple things, and that's very much what we need in cyber. So from a privacy and civil liberties perspective, we can literally go to those bare indicators. A great example that I got from a colleague was he told me that he grew up in the Midwest, and he used to run for cover when the sky turned yellow. So yellow is the indicator. What it really means meteorologically is that there's likely frozen dirt in the upper atmosphere. And in the summer, if you're seeing an indication of freezing and you have really hot air below you, that creates convective behavior and that creates bad storms. That's the exact way we want to look at cybersecurity. So we have our data that we are looking and collecting from the private sector, from the government, into our single portal in the NCIC. And that single portal is so important. Instead of having 9 locations for this, having it all in one place creates that weather map very quickly. Tornadoes happen fast, cyber happens faster.
I hope you've enjoyed the perspectives, insights, recommendations, and profiles presented on today's The Business of Government magazine, a special edition of the Business of Government Hour. You may download or order a free copy of the latest Business of Government magazine at businessofgovernment.org and find out how the business of government is not business as usual. Be sure to join us next week for another informative, insightful, and in-depth conversation on improving government effectiveness. For the Business of Government Hour, I'm Michael Keegan, and thanks for joining us.
This has been the Business of Government Hour. Be sure to visit us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. There you can learn more about our programs and get a transcript of today's conversation. Until next week, it's businessofgovernment.org.